So I wanted to just kind of catch us up to where we are, because there's a few ladies that are just joining us or joined us last week. I'm going to try to remember sequentially to kind of go back and look at this. Again, just visual things. I'm trying to give you a lot of visual things because you've got to at least grasp, you know, what did it look like, or what are the potentials for what it looked like or placement of that. So what is the first structure we've put in our diagram? What's this? The bronze altar, and what was the second one on the outer border? What was that?
Labor.
Okay, good. Okay, so I drew this box in, and I am not an artist, so I'm not the one to be drawing this, but I'm going to give it my best shot. This is the actual outer perimeter of the tabernacle proper. Okay, so when we look at the lesson, just as a reminder, we were looking at it in perspective of the priest and what he would have saw, when would he have seen it. So we've got the doorway here that comes into the outer courtyard. We've already looked at that doorway. We've already looked at the outer courtyard, which is where all those little dots in the diagram were. Mm-hmm. Now we're moving through this opening here, which is, do you remember from your lesson what that was called? Mm-hmm. What was that? Mm-hmm.
The screen.
The screen. Oh, the screen. Right, Vivian. Yes, the screen, yes. It's the screen, or depending on what translation, it's the veil, but it's the primary entrance into the tabernacle. Next week, we're going to look at what's here, and the following week, we're going to look at what's in the second compartment. So we looked at coverings today, during the week. I'm not going to put anything in these boxes, but that kind of catches you up to kind of where we should be right now. Is everybody kind of on the same page? So, did all the ladies get a handout? I've got two handouts this morning. One of them is this. Do you ladies have this? Okay. So, last week we looked at actually the structure of the tabernacle. We looked at the sockets. We looked at the boards. So that's the foundation of the tabernacle, which again is this structure here, right? So we've got sockets all the way around with the exception of the front. There's going to be pillars there, and there's also pillars here with sockets that aren't silver, right, for those pillars. So that's what we, in a nutshell, what we looked at last week. So let's look at Exodus. And again, depending on, is everybody using NAS, or is there another translation?
ESV.
ESV? Okay. All right. Yeah, it's interesting looking at Exodus 26 with respect to different translations and how they translated it. So I'm just going to concentrate on the screen right now, which again, the screen is going to be this entrance here into the tabernacle. So 26, 36, and 37. You shall make a screen for the doorway of the tent of blue and purple and scarlet material and fine twisted linen, the work of a weaver. You shall make five pillars of acacia for the screen and overlay them with gold, their hooks also being of gold, and you shall cast five sockets of bronze for them. So what did you learn with regard to the screen from that passage?
It's very beautiful.
It's very beautiful, okay. Yeah. Anything, other insights there?
It was made of the same material as the high priest's garments.
Okay.
Purple, scarlet material with fine twisted linen.
Right.
It was woven.
Okay. Great. Well, and in the appendix, I think I put a little blurb on linen, and I forgot my piece. I had a piece of Egyptian linen I was going to bring for you to look at. Flax is native to Eastern Mediterranean Egypt. And so primarily their linen is made from flax. So it's a long It's a long, can grow up to 4 feet. They harvest it, and the flax is harvested from the fiber in the stem of that. And then fine linen, and again, if you're a sewer, you can appreciate this. Or even if you're buying linens, right, for your bed, it'll say so many, yeah, thread count. So what that, for fine linen, there would be about 140 strands of thread per inch and 64 strands horizontally. So you've got 140 strands, 64 this way, so it's fairly tight, and it has a really, just because of the way they do it, it has a really soft feel to it. So it really marked quality and it marked wealth in Egypt and in that area of the world at that time. So how is the screen supported?
Pillars of acacia wood.
Pillars of acacia wood, okay. Okay. So then we've got a, you've got my other, so I have another sheet here I want you to look at. The top is pretty much what we have here, but the bottom is the pillars. So there's 5 pillars, sockets that those pillars sat into. Again, depending on what picture you meet, they might look like this. They might be, you know, there might have been more space in between them. Other than, what we know for sure is there were 5 pillars. And then the curtain we're talking about of the screen was hung behind that.
So we don't have any real pictures of those. We just have to guess.
Right. Yeah. So Jen is handing out this. So that's the purpose of the first page. And then there's a pictures on the back that I'm going to refer to here in a minute. So what direction did it face?
East.
Okay. And then just thinking back as far as what we've already looked at, some of it in the fall, or when Jen did the priest, who would be allowed to enter this doorway? So who would be allowed to enter this doorway?
The priest.
The priest?
The Levite.
And the high priest?
Once a year.
So
didn't the Levites also?
So here's the thing, and it's hard because we're trying to do this sequentially. And we're going to look at this next week more when we talk about the candlesticks and how those are serviced daily. But who's going to go in here are going to be the priests and the high priest, naturally. Okay, then we've got a veil here, which we're talking about next week.
Yeah.
And the only person going in there is the high priest, right? Okay. Okay, so Exodus 35:25. So somehow we had to get the linen and all of this into a screen. Who was responsible for helping that come to be? 35:25.
Skilled women.
Yeah, all skilled women. All the skilled women spun with their hands and brought what they had spun. In blue, purple, scarlet, and in fine linen. Mm-hmm. And then verse 26, all the women whose heart stirred with a skill spun the goat's hair. We're going to talk about the goat's hair in a minute. So who were the weavers? What's that?
The wise men.
Okay. Do we have names for any of them at this point?
From those? Galil.
Yeah.
And Olia.
Okay. Okay. Great, great.
Names that we can't pronounce.
Right. But it's interesting because the women were the ones that, in a sense, spun the yarn, and then the guys were the ones that actually did all the weaving.
What I loved is it was in their strength. You know, sometimes just anybody can do certain things mm-hmm. and get the job done. But working in your strength and your giftedness, whatever that is, and they were purposely gifted.
Yeah.
And that is...
That God purposed that for them.
Yes. And they all worked under the direction of Ithamar, the son of Aaron.
Right. So we've got a couple of tribes that are represented there too. What were they?
Dan.
Okay. And Judah. Excellent. Okay. So the next part, I'm just going to preface this by saying that Exodus 26, 1 through 6 should have been in this next question. And again, just due to some restrictions, that wasn't added. But that is where we're going to find this first set of curtains.
Exodus 26.
So Exodus 26, 1 through 6. And I want to read it in a different translation. Again, I think sometimes, you know, NAS, ESV, we talk a little bit about different translations versus transliterations, like the Living Bible and that. So I usually look at ESV, I look at NAS, I go, Hebrew's not my language. So if I get stuck, I'll just call Letha. And then Greek, there's the interlinear Bible that you can use. But a lot of times, if I'm stuck on something or if it's not coming into place, I'll go to like the Message or the New Living Translation, only because it gives us a different perspective. I don't study off of that, but sometimes it just kind of helps. So I want to read to you with the New Living Translation this first part. So make the tabernacle from 10 curtains of finely woven linen. Decorate the curtains with blue, purple, and scarlet thread, and with skillfully embroidered cherubim. These 10 curtains must be all the exact same size, 42 feet long and 6 feet wide. Join 5 of these curtains together to make one long curtain, then join the other 5 into a second long curtain. Put loops of blue yarn along the edge of the last curtain in each set. The 50 loops along the edge of one curtain are to match the 50 loops along the edge of the other curtain. Then make 50 gold clasps and fasten the long curtains together with the clasp. And in this way, the tabernacle will be made of one continuous piece. Now, turn the page over for a minute. So there are lots of interpretations of what the probability of what that first layer would have looked like, which is the number one on there, that embroidered part. And scholars over time have interpreted it two ways. One that it covers, and one that somehow, and Strong's gives it's kind of supportive for how the curtains plausibly could have fit on the inside walls and the ceiling. So it's hard to know for certain. But the majority of what I found was that the initial part we're talking about, the linen. And this is actually a piece of linen I got in Israel, but it's pretty coarse. So this would be the first piece. So at this point, again, Peter didn't hollow out the top, but it would be basically that, right? So you've got no wood ceiling support, but this would drape over both sides in the front and hang down the back. So basically when a priest would go in, what they would see would be the ceiling. And that would be the embroidered part. Some interpreters say that somehow there was the ceiling and it came down the sides, and that's what made the internal chamber of the tabernacle. I couldn't wrap my mind around how that all would work, but there's two, I just wanted to tell you there's two ways to look at that. You know, the other layers are fairly straightforward. It's this initial one when you look at the passage of how things, like, which is why I showed you the video of how the curtains were, you know, sewn together and possibly the clasp and how that would have looked. So, again, does that matter? You know, God would have been very specific if it was something left, you know, many years down the road that we needed to know. I mean, obviously, he was very purposed in his construction and what he wanted, and he'd shown the pattern to Moses, so there's no question there. This picture on the top, I need to tell you, I've been in communication with Dr. Varner down at Masters, and so he was a great delight and just said, you know, present both ways. this is easier for me to understand. So that's where the top picture comes from, is compliments of him sending that to me. Okay. So what's the design on this number one first, the curtains that we looked at in 26, 1 through 6? What's the design that's on the curtains? What's that? The cherubim, correct? Right. And then what, and let's, someone look at Colossians 1:16 and read that for us. So if you're there, would you read it?
For by him all things were created, both in the heavens and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him.
So what does that have to do with the cherubim?
They're created by him.
Created, okay.
By him and for him.
Yes. That wasn't a trick question, really.
Was it a trick question?
Oh, although I had a few texts about it.
What I done was wrong.
Well, and John MacArthur also, I think, in his footnotes about that passage in Colossians, talks about thrones, dominions, and what is it, powers, principalities, that all that referenced a hierarchy of angels. So, for what that's worth. Okay, so the first section that we're considering is what? The tabernacle. The verse talks about it is one joined curtain. And really, it's a set of 10 pieces, right, that were put together. And then we know that it was the cherubim, that we had cherubim on it. And fine linen of blue, purple, and scarlet. Okay, so the verse says it's the tabernacle. That's that first section. Any questions about that? Okay. So, moving on, continuing on with the cherubim. So, what role did they have? So, when you looked at Genesis 22:24, what are we seeing them? How are we seeing them?
Guards.
Guards.
The tree of life in the Garden of Eden.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, and specifically,
they're guarding the entrance.
They're guarding the entrance. And what was the orientation of that entrance?
East.
Okay. Good. So where did we find them in the tabernacle then? Right. Pardon? Right. So we looked at this.
To the east?
Yes.
What scripture says the tabernacle faced east?
So you have to go. So there's a couple things. We've covered it once. And then if you look at, and again, I don't have time to go back, and where we're talking about the curtains, and it talks about curtains for the north, the south, and the west, there's nothing specific to the east. So when we were looking at, so there's a few things you have to go through to deduct to get to that point. And then when we looked at the bronze altar and the laver, there was an orientation that way that we got there. So, yeah.
I just figured it was the temple faces.
Well, and the temple was, or right? The temple was modeled after the tabernacle. So, yeah. And that's the hard part, is keeping the distinction between.
Well,
yeah.
In 26:22, it said that the rear faced west.
Yes.
So the opposite of that. Would
right. Exactly. Yeah. So, no, I looked for that for you coming into it. But, no, it doesn't say that. You just get that by deducing that. Yeah.
Numbers 3:38 does say that the people were in the front of the eastward before the tent. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if that's where a lot of people got that.
That could be. Anne, did you have a
No, I was going to say the same thing.
Oh, okay. All right, great. Okay, so we see the cherubim on the curtains. Mm-hmm. Where else?
On the ceiling.
Mercy. On the Ark of the Covenant.
Correct. And we're going to go into detail on that in a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. The other verse I did not give you, and partly because we're going to look at this next week, looking at compartments, it's on the veil. The cherubim are on the veil.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So we talked about who would have seen these cherubim, but just for sake of review, who would have seen these cherubim?
The priest.
Okay. So, where did you see the cherubim on the screen?
Yes.
No?
Yes.
So going into the tabernacle, that outermost door, no cherubim.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You get in, then it's on the ceiling or maybe the walls. And in the veil. So that would be pretty obvious. There are cherubim everywhere. Okay. So Ezekiel. Someone want to read, if they're brave enough to read the portion for us? Ezekiel 10, 1 through 20.
Okay, somebody want to stop. Okay. Then I looked and behold, in the stand that was over the heads of the cherubim, something like sapphire stone in appearance, resembling a throne, appeared above them. And he spoke to the man clothed in linen and said, enter between the whirling wheels under the cherubim and fill your hands with the coals of fire from between the cherubim and scatter them over the city. And he entered in my sight. Now the cherubim was standing on the right side of the temple when the man entered, and the cloud filled the inner court. Then the glory of the Lord went up from the cherub to the threshold of the temple, and the temple was filled with the cloud, and the court was filled with the brightness of the glory of the Lord. Moreover, the sound of the wings of the cherubim was heard as far as the outer court, like the voice of God Almighty when he speaks. And it came about when he commanded the man clothed in linen, saying, take fire from between the whirling wheels, from between the cherubim. He entered and stood beside a wheel. Then the cherub stretched out his hand from between the cherubim to the fire, which was between the cherubim, took some, and put it in the hands of the one clothed in linen, who took it and went out. And the cherubim appeared to have the form of a man's hand under their wings. Then I looked, and behold, four wheels beside the cherubim, one wheel beside each cherub, and the appearance of the wheels was like the gleam of a Tarshish stone. And as for their appearance, all four of them had the same likeness, as if one wheel were within another wheel. When they moved, they went in any of the four directions, without turning as they went. But they followed in the direction which they faced, without turning as they went. And their whole body, their backs, their hands, their wings, and the wheels were full of eyes all around, the wheels belonging to all four of them. The wheels were called, in my hearing, the whirling wheels, and each one had four faces. The first face was the face of a cherub, the second face was the face of a man, the third the face of a lion, and the fourth the face of an eagle. Then the cherubim rose up. They are the living beings that I saw by the river Shabar. Now when the cherubim moved, the wheels would go beside them. Also, when the cherubim lifted up their wings to rise from the ground, the wheels would not turn from beside them. When the cherubim stood still, the wheels would stand still. And when they rose up, the wheels would rise with them, for the spirit of a living being was in them. Then the glory of the Lord departed from the threshold of the temple and stood over the cherubim. When the cherubim departed, they lifted their wings and rose up from the earth in my sight with the wheels beside them. And they stood still at the entrance of the east gate of the Lord's house, and the glory of the God of Israel hovered over them. These are the living beings that I saw beneath the God of Israel by the river Chebar. So I knew that they were cherubim.
Hmm. Okay.
Wow.
I know. Did that give you an image?
Trippy.
And we're going to come back and look at this again in the future when we talk about God's glory leaving. So what were some of the things, just cursory, that you saw with regard to cherubim there?
They're terrifying looking.
Okay.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Under their wings.
Yeah.
Yeah. They commanded the wheels. I mean,
were
these
part of them, or were they?
No.
They were.
Again, I'm not going to deal with this in a prophecy level right now. That's why I said cursory, Kim. Because, I mean, the whole idea is what it comes down to is we don't know exactly what these cherubim were like that were embroidered on all of these components we're going to look at. So, but this is the closest description we have to what they could look like, right? That would have been on that. Well, and we've kind of already said they're creative beings, they're living beings. And you see in this whole passage just a couple of other things. They're at the end, they're at the east gate. They're responding only to the instructions given by God. So they weren't, you know, doing their own thing. And they were also able to stand in the presence of God in His glory. That's pretty important. And then again, if you look at where they're placed in perspective of the tabernacle, that kind of opens up hopefully a little bit of understanding too. And I don't have an artistic rendition of a cherubim, sorry. Yeah, well, there you go. You do it, and when we, you know, we'll be in there next week in the chamber, so, you know, or no, following week, 2 weeks, Jen, or 2 weeks. One of the two of you can do that.
Was it Pastor John that was talking about the cherubim in Revelation, how they were there to, you know, protect God's?
Well, you know, they were in the presence of God. You see in Genesis where they're guarding. Yeah. So, again, we're looking at just, there's elements of that. We pick up what their role was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have no idea what they look like.
No. I mean, only from Ezekiel's the only description that we have. So, interesting.
A lot of people
Oh, I know. And that's the thing is, when I started looking at those, it's like, oh, okay, there's everything across the board. So, yeah. That's not as helpful as just knowing what their role was.
Right.
And
well, that's more important, knowing what their role was.
Yeah. So, okay, let's go back to Exodus again. So we've looked at whether it's, you know, draped over like this, whether it's ceiling and curtains on the inside for the wall. So that's what we've looked at so far. So Exodus 7 through 14... 26, 7 through 14, right? So 26, 7 through 14. So I'm going to just read this, and then we'll kind of look at each one of these elements. So first off, we've seen the tabernacle is this 10-joined curtain, however form that takes. And then the next is that you shall make curtains of goat's hair for a tent over the tabernacle. You shall make 11 curtains in all. The length of each curtain shall be 30 cubits. The width of each curtain, 4 cubits. 11 curtains shall have the same measurements. You'll join 5 curtains by themselves and the other 6 by themselves. And you shall double over the 6th curtain at the front of the tent. Which our video kind of, I think, did a really good job of showing that to us. You shall have 50 loops on the edge of the curtain that is the outermost in the first set. And 50 loops on the edge of the curtain that is outermost in the second set. You shall make 50 clasps of bronze, and you shall put the clasp into the loops and join the tent together so that it will be one unit. So here we've got clasps of gold. This next covering is... So what's the next covering made of?
Goat's hair.
So there didn't seem to be too much discrepancy in in that, as far as scholars all agreed, it was goat's hair. So, again, there wasn't a sacrifice involved for this one. So then it talks about position. The overlapping part that is left over in the curtains of the tent, the half curtain that is left over, shall lap over the back of the tabernacle, the cubit of one side and the cubit of the other. What is left over in the strength of the curtains of the tent shall lap over the sides of the tabernacle and each side and onto the other to cover it. So, again, you get that picture. This is it. We've moved from the tabernacle to now coverings. Does everybody see that?
Yeah.
Okay. So here is my attempt to give you an example. So aside from my seam job, because there were strips, right? There were lots of strips. Mm-hmm. So this top part was folded over, and then blue loops. And I didn't have metal clasps to put in there, but just pretend there's little clasps that are holding these two half parts, and then this came down and over the sides. That's the goat's hair. Okay. Some authors say it was black. Some show it as being this color for goat's hair. I don't think we can know for sure, right? It doesn't say that. So if it doesn't say that, I'm not going to... It could be this, could have been that. All right.
Well, it was from the goat, so that's, you know.
Right. Yes. Okay, so then the next covering is seen in verse 14. So you will make a covering for the tent of
ram skin.
Right, ram's skin.
Dyed red.
Right. Okay. So what do we know about what's a ram? Anybody? What's a ram?
A male goat.
Or sheep.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, it's a male that has remained a male. It's not castrated, right? Okay. Very interesting. The Jews viewed this as a substitute animal. This is the first covering that's going to require death, right? Can't get skin without killing the animal. We don't have specifics on size. We know that it was part of the covering of the tent. The interesting thing with that as well is their dye process. I mean, all that's in the appendix, and I don't have time to go over that as well. But from the time that I initially studied this to like last year when I started looking at research and archaeology and all of that with regard to colors now, it is pretty exciting that they have confirmed, you know what, that they know where the blue came from. They know what the process for the red. And so those things are just continue to be validating and exciting that, you know, we just didn't conjure that up into thin air. Scripture says those things and how did they achieve the purple and the blue. So if you didn't look at that, take time to look at those because that is very interesting. Okay, so what's the third covering? Okay. So on this one, it's interesting because I think Jeannie, your Bible said something different, didn't it?
Badger.
Mm-hmm. And then if you look at, I'm trying to think, there's another translation that says sea cow or manatee,
yeah.
Right? So all that to say, what? We don't know. We don't know exactly. But it's interesting when you look at, and probably Aletha would know this, is that coverings for the tabernacle were probably the skins of the sea cow that were common in the Red Sea. Mm-hmm. And then you look at terms like the Arabs of Sinai apply that Hebrew word for badger to seals, and I can't even pronounce this other word, seals and sea cows, essentially. So there's continued use of that term for those animals. So again, do we really know for sure? No. Does it really matter?
It was
waterproof is what I...
Right, yes.
To me, it was the...
Yeah. Right.
From the sea.
Right. Yes. True. So yeah, so that was one of the things, is that, again, this is used as a tent covering. And it would have been that that would have provided protection, water protection on the very top. So we have rams dyed red on the top and good old corduroy on the very, very top. So again, there was no measurements, but obviously this top had to be pretty durable to hold up to the little rain they got. And also the wind, the sand, all of that, right? So, again, God's perfect design. And all of these things were considered the tent over the tabernacle. Okay? So far, does that all make sense? Okay.
So the curtain is not considered the tent over the tabernacle? The first curtain of the church?
So, no, because in the terms it says curtains and it says it forms the tabernacle. Okay. Screen is different. Screen is, remember that picture I had over here? Mm-hmm. Screen was that doorway into the tabernacle.
Okay, so get one more time. What did they call the first covering then?
So it was just curtains.
Oh, just curtains. Okay.
Or linen, but it just said, you shall make the tabernacle. And so that tabernacle was the twisted linen and the blue, purple, and scarlet. It had to have been just exquisite, right? The colors, just exquisite. And I know when I looked at those colors online that they're making, the blue and the purple with the murex snails, you can get a really vibrant blue that I didn't think was possible any other way, you know, just, it's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful.
Well, and that nothing was left to the skilled men and women to, well, let's do it this way. God said, do it this way.
And I'm relatively certain that, like, with the colors, the blue and the purple and the red would have been very uniform in color.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So to have been able to see that would have been, oh, just exquisite.
Denise?
Yes?
What I thought when I was studying this is, you know, the first sandstorm that came up, you know, and that's not the point. It's where God dwells. It doesn't matter if
right.
it gets dirty. And I just love that, you know, when they made the temple, the first time the priest tried to go in, God's glory kicked them out.
Yeah.
It's all about... Mm-hmm. God's mm-hmm. glory, nothing about it mm-hmm. getting dirty or because right. all of us that are clean priests might.
Well, it was on a dirt floor or on the, you know, it was on sand, so we already got a problem.
It just doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't. Well, the interesting thing is, whatever this material is, I found it was my little bunny trail, my only bunny trail for this morning, maybe, is this is the same material that the sandals were made of. That never wore out, whatever it is. So I thought, oh, that is so cool. Because again, God's provision, there's nothing here that says you're going to make this fine, beautifully embroidered thing, and then we're going to do it in installments. Every year you're going to have to replace it. There's nothing like that. Nothing like that.
And how many times they took it apart and put it back together?
Right.
Our things that they took apart and put together, like mm-hmm. decorations and stuff, they wear out.
Yeah. Yes. Okay, so I cannot see the clock.
It's almost 10:10.
Okay, I've
it
got.
It's 12:10.
Okay, 12. Thanks, Patty. There's hope for this. So in addendum to looking at, since we were looking at coverings, right? The next thing was the
furniture utensils?
Yes, the furniture and the utensils. So we'll just entitle it that. Okay, and then the coverings of such. Now we know in Exodus 40 it says what when it was time to move on. It was clear that it was time to move on. In the fact that throughout all their journeys, whenever the cloud, which is representing the glory of God, throughout all their journeys, whenever the cloud was taken up from over the tabernacle, the sons of Israel would set out. But if the cloud was not taken up, when they did not set out until the day when it was taken up, then they just kind of essentially stayed put. So, again, in this is giving the context for Numbers. Guess what? They've gotten the sign they need to move. And so God gives them some very specific instructions in Numbers 4 of how that's going to happen and who's going to take care of that. So, again, for time, let's just look at each of the elements and how they were covered. So, Numbers 4, 5 through 20. So, 5, when the camp sets out, Aaron and his sons shall go in and they shall take down the veil of the screen and cover the Ark of the Testimony with it. So, what's the Ark covered with?
The veil.
And then what's the next?
The other skin, the rock.
Yeah, whatever that is. I'm just going to put pea skin. How's that? Does that work? Mm-hmm. Porpoise skin? Okay, and then what's the next piece?
The pure blue cloth.
Yes. Pure blue cloth. Okay. So we've got the veil that wraps around it, then the porpoise skin, and then the blue cloth. So that's going to make it pretty evident that that's the ark, right? Mm-hmm. What's the next piece in verse 7?
Table of showbread.
Okay. And in respect to that, what else is going to be covered in with the same coverings?
Plates and dishes.
Right, yeah, so all the ancillary stuff. So it's going to be the dishes, and we're going to look at this next week, the details of these. The pans, bowls, jars. Okay, so how are they covered?
A cloth of scarlet.
Who said that?
Cloth of scarlet. No?
What translation are you using?
Someone's just one.
Are you saying that
too?
Okay. That's one of the coverings.
Oh. Is this the one first?
Yeah.
Verse 8 of 4 says cloth of scarlet.
So read verse 7 first, Kim.
Over the table of the bread of the presence they shall also spread a cloth of blue.
Okay. And then what?
And then the dishes.
Right?
The dishes and everything on it.
Uh-huh.
And then that is covered with scarlet.
Scarlet. Okay. Does that comprise all of it then?
No.
What do you cover that with?
Porpoise.
Okay. So the porpoise skin is on top of that. So three coverings for both the table of showbread and the ark. Okay. What about the lampstand? That's verse 9.
Blue cloth. Does that start?
Blue cloth. Blue cloth.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that goes for all of the lamps, snuffers, tray, oil.
Okay.
And then purpose skin.
Okay. So cloth of blue and then the porpoise skin. So lampstand, lamps, snuffers, so basically anything that's going to be related to the service of the lampstand. Okay. What's the next piece?
Golden altar.
Okay. And again, we're going to look at this next week as well. This is not the same as the altar we talked about with offerings, right?
Right.
Okay. So what's that covered? What's
the cloth and the porpoise skin.
Ah, okay, so same as the lampstand, right? Mm-hmm. What else do we have that's listed? Verse 12.
Utensils of service.
Okay, what are the utensils of service?
Shovels, forks, basins, shovels.
Right, so it would be the, by reason of what's missing, it's basically all the utensils that are being used in association with the altar. I'm just going to put utensils there. And how are they covered?
Purple cloth. Purple skin.
Purple? Is it purple or is it blue?
I'm thinking of the fire pans, the forks.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. So this one is the same. It's this cloth of blue and porpoise skin. Okay. So then what's the last one that we see?
Ashes from the altar, the fire pans, the forks, the shovels, and the basin.
Okay.
And that's covered with porpoise skin. Yeah.
So the fire pans, forks, shovels, basically all the utensils. Okay. And this one is purple and porpoise skin. So why was it important that the veil, which is the part we haven't looked at, that's the veil is the one that separated the holy place and the Holy of Holies. Why was that used to cover the ark? Does anyone have thoughts about that?
I do. It keeps the holy from the profane because they were no one could see the holy objects or they would die.
Okay, yes.
Yeah. It's also, this was the throne of God upon the earth also.
The veil itself didn't, but, you know, obviously this and this is including the mercy seat, yes. Right.
Okay.
So Numbers, and I think Star mentioned this, but Numbers 4:15 says, when Aaron and his sons have covered the holy objects and all the furnishings of the sanctuary, and when the camp is set out after that, the sons of Kohath shall come to carry them so that they will not touch the holy objects and die. So there was that out. And then, if that wasn't clear, then he tells them, well, this all needs to be done. All these coverings need to be done so that they shall not go in to see the holy objects even for a moment or they will die. So there's the seeing
so
and the touching.
Covering the
yes.
Mercy seat, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But there's also poles.
So once it's covered, the impression I got was once they were covered, then his sons would come in with the poles and
because obviously the high priest couldn't move that himself.
No.
I was curious, and maybe you don't want to answer this yet, but as far as the ark is concerned, that's the only thing that was at the very end was covered with the pure blue cloth. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, was that, I was wondering if, because when they were transporting things, that blue cloth, everybody, or those at the, is the, where do you come?
Sons of Israel? Priests?
Yeah, the priests
would
know that this was God amongst them. This is the things that...
Well, I mean, clearly it would mark if there was any question,
but
right?
Every color of cloth that was used to wrap or cover these things was covered with porpoise skin.
No, not this one, though.
Yeah, see, this one. Here's the interesting thing. You've got the veil, the porpoise skin, and then the blue cloth, and that's what everybody's going to see. The blue cloth was over the porpoise skin. That's the only one that is, right? This is, yeah. And it's interesting, the veil continued to provide this barrier between man and God.
Can I?
Yeah, I had to, the veil always separated the holy from the most holy. I believe it was still serving the same purpose. It was the only item covered with blue cloth at the end. Instead of goat skin, the priest could see and know this was God with them, this, which was the throne
right.
of God.
Which is exactly what Star, you yes. might not have heard what Star said, but exactly what Star said. Mary, did you have a...
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you, you got on there the altar ashes. It says that they, in 13, and they shall take away the ashes. It's not saying that they're packing them up.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. They remove the ashes and then they pack up the,
right,
the altar and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry,
no, that's good because I know that there were two understandings there. So I appreciate you clarifying that. Mm-hmm. Okay. I can't believe our time's up already, but it is. So if you have any other questions, or even during the week when you're doing your lesson, don't hesitate to call me. If I can't get right back to you, I will, because I would be more than happy to clarify or whatnot in your process. So the whole thing is, what's the so what in all of this? And Lord willing, in your small groups, you can talk about that this morning. So let me just close in prayer. Father, I just praise you and thank you that you are holy. Lord, that you purpose this as a picture. And Father, even though there's all the logistics of curtains and coverings and furniture, Lord, all of it just continues to point back to you and your holiness and your purpose of dwelling with man. And Father, I just thank you for this picture and for this time in your precious word, Lord. And I just pray, Father, that we would not get lost in the technicalities of things, but we would be reminded that you are holy and you lay out what you demand for worship and how you are to be approached. And Father, even just this week, as far as using skilled women to spin and to have hearts that were stirred to spin the goat's hair, Lord, I just thank you for that example. And Lord, I just pray as we go forth even today that all of us would be moved to share our faith with others. And Lord, that you would take your precious word and apply it to our hearts and help us to be obedient in that calling. We just thank you, Lord, and pray that our time in our small groups would be precious. And Lord, that we would leave as women who are impacted for you. In Jesus' name, amen.